Sorry, folks. I was just getting an education about the Schmaltz Cup.
That's right. First of all, it's not the Schmaltz Cup. It's the Schmaltz Cup. As you've been through before with the Stanley Cup.
I can't even get the Schmaltz Cup right. I can't even get it right.
We're educating Maddie because Maddie played with Midland. The Schmaltz Cup, the Clarence Schmaltz Cup, I'll have you know, is the championship trophy for junior C hockey, okay, in Ontario. Now, junior C hockey, essentially, the coaches, it's funny because I work with Todd Warner, ex-NHL, and he does our junior hockey package with us. And Todd coached junior C hockey for a couple of years. And I said, what was your biggest challenge? Because junior C hockey is like, okay, that's it. You're bottom of the barrel junior. You're not really going anywhere.
Our producer played. So this is
really... Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm getting to. Maddie played for Midland for a couple years.
Well, we got on this story because I said I was splitting a 26er with a player on the way to the game.
Well, that's just it. Now, did everyone hear that? Your mic's hot on that one, Maddie?
Yeah. Yep.
Okay, good. So we're talking about the Schmaltz Cup and junior C hockey. And Warner says to me, I asked him, it's funny, just talking about junior C hockey a couple of weeks ago. And I said, as a head coach of a junior C team, what was your biggest challenge? And he said, making sure the guys showed up. Making sure the guys would actually show up for the game. Because trust me, when you're playing junior C hockey, like, that's it. You're going right to men's league. You're going right to work in the factory. Or you're going to go right to working as a producer for a, you know, Go Nowhere podcast. That's never going to get sponsored. No one's going to listen to it. Just going to languish in obscurity on iTunes. That's going to be you. So Greg just had his first lesson in what the Schmaltz Cup was all about last year. It was won by Lakefield. They beat Essex 4-0. Lakefield was actually a force last year. The only team that gave him a shot was Picton in the opening round, who stretched him out to 7 games. But then they swept Grimsby and they swept Essex to win the Schmaltz Cup.
Maddie, I have a question for you.
Yes.
Was there ever the vibe when you guys are playing of someone being like, yeah, I'm gonna split this no good 2-bit town and make junior B? Like, was there that thing, or was you all felt cast into hockey purgatory?
There was sometimes you would get like a 15 or 16-year-old that would come out of AAA early, and he had high hopes, but you usually crush them pretty quick.
Delusional.
You watch, man. I'm not gonna be here. I'm gonna be playing in Trenton next week. You watch, man. I'm playing in Trenton. Show all you am. I'm gonna go to Wellington. I know someone out Wellington. I'm gonna play at Wellington.
Yeah, I've got you all. You're all stuck here. Trapped.
Suckers. Not me, man. I'm going to play Coburg with the Cougars in that new nice rink.
Woo.
Mm-hmm. Actually, it's a nice rink.
For Clarence Schmaltz. Imagine Clarence Schmaltz is a man who used to send a lot of greeting cards. Just real.
Hang on.
Real Schmaltz.
The trophy,
real Schmaltz-y guy.
Trophy named in honor of Clarence. Oh, this is where it gets even stupider and more hockeyer. The trophy was named in honor of Clarence Tubby Schmaltz, a longtime hockey administrator who first got involved in organized sports and adopted hometown of Walkerton, Ontario. Walkerton, who, by the way, is best known for the E. coli scare from a few years ago.
Look, honestly, I don't know what this cat looked like, but all I know is this. If you're so fat that you overcome the name Schmaltz, like Schmaltzy, with Tubby, like they need another name other than Schmaltzy.
Yeah, man.
Wow.
And they named the trophy after him. Clarence Tubby Schmaltz, 1915 to 1981.
Wow.
He became the league's first commissioner in 1974, mm-hmm. a post he held until 1978. Wow.
Yeah, Jacques, Tubby Schmaltz here. Oh, I understand one of your boys got in trouble on the bus yesterday, splitting a beer.
On the morning of December 7th, 81, he died suddenly of a heart attack 12 days before his 65th birthday. I have a hard time believing someone whose nickname was Tubby died before he was 65. Hockey! Yeah!
He died tragically at age 65 for being too healthy.
Too healthy, nope. Yeah, exactly. Choked on a piece of celery. It was tragic, really. Died eating a salad. No, actually, no, he didn't.
All right. Oh, yeah. Today is a very special show in the sense that it's 45 minutes long and we don't have a guest because we really screwed the pooch on going postal yesterday, so we decided to kick that to today. I did want to bring up today's Twitter debate about the Norris Trophy, but you groaned.
Tell me what. Because you like the trophy thing a lot more than I do. But
as a voter, yeah, the debate? I do. Yeah.
Okay, because I don't vote, so I don't have. You know, what do you do? But even if I did vote, who cares? What's the Twitter debate about the Norris Trophy?
If you were going to say right now who the Norris Trophy winner was going to, okay, let me rephrase that. If you're going to give me your Norris Trophy finalists, your top three for the Norris, who'd they be right now?
Mark Giordano.
But he's not going to win. He's hurt.
I know he's not going to win. I would say, let me think. I would put Shea Weber into that mix.
All right.
I would probably put. I still would put Mark Giordano on the ballot in top three.
Oh, sweetie.
What?
But he's not going to win, though. I actually voted. See, that's the thing. I voted him second last year. So I mean, I might agree with you that there needs to be some reverence and some acknowledgement that he was the best defenseman this season.
Yeah. Geez, I haven't really thought about who the best defensemen are this year. Should I throw into that mix?
Let me give you my top
yours?
Three. Okay.
All right.
Shea Weber, Chris Letang, Drew Doughty. That'd be
I'm
my
with
top
you on
three.
Doughty. I don't know that I'm down with Chris Letang. I'd have to look
really
at
good.
A lot. I'd have to look at it a
he's
lot,
really
a lot
good.
Closer.
But here's the thing, Evan Spohr, who's a real smart cookie over on NHL.com, he's a staff writer there, did a Norris Trophy piece this morning, and not in the finalist and not in the also in the mix section was Shea Weber. Shea Weber not even mentioned.
Oof.
Do you want to know why?
Why not? Yeah.
Analytics.
Really?
Yeah, analytics, and that's going to be the tricky thing, man. Like this, if you go inside the numbers aren't all that kind to Shea Weber. But there's no doubt he's been a really good defenseman this year.
Okay, what's the gentleman's name?
Evan Spohr.
Okay, who does Evan have as his top three?
He has a finalist list of Christopher Letang, Pernell Carlsson-Subban, mm-hmm. and Drew Minimus Doughty the third.
Drew Minimus Doughticus. So if he was a general manager then, and he had Shea Weber, he would trade him for Chris Letang.
Well, I don't know if he would, but here is also in the mix.
That's what I always come back to. Like a couple of years ago, when people were saying that Jake Muzzin had better analytics than Drew Doughty, I always say, well, okay, then if you're a GM, you trade Muzzin for Doughty then, right?
That's also happened this morning. Muzzin and Roman Josi are arguably having really better seasons than Doughty and Weber, based on the analytics.
Okay. Then I dare you to be a GM and trade those two players.
In the mix, Erik Karlsson, Nick Leddy, Duncan Keith, and Anton Strahlman for the Norris. See, you're in a tough position right now because I know you want to dismiss all this stuff, even though you do believe in analytics, as I do. But Shea Weber wouldn't be on a Norris list, but Anton Strahlman would is kind of.
This is the point where you say to yourself, it's part of it, but it's not all of it. And it's the part where it comes down to, would you trade Roman Josi for Shea Weber? Like, if you had Shea Weber, would you say, you know what? The analytics for Roman Josi are a lot better. I'd rather have him on my team. If you do, I tell you, you'd be employed for about 2 seconds in the NHL. you traded who for who? What? What just happened? What did we do? That's why I always say it's even the analytics guys will tell you it's just part of it, too. That's why it's not the whole thing. Until you have to pull the trigger on something like that. Hey, man, we have Shea Weber, but you know what? The analyst on Anton Strahlman is really good. Call Steve Yzerman. Does he want Shea Weber? Because I want that Strahlman. Have you seen his numbers?
If you're essentially – I don't – see, the trading thing is what it is, but I think essentially what you're saying is this. If you pluck Shea Weber off the Nashville Predators, what do they become? Roman Josi's team? If you pluck Drew Doughty off the LA Kings, will Jake Muzzin fill the void? Or will either of those teams go into a perilous tailspin?
Yeah, they go into a tailspin.
Of course they would. Weber's going to win based on reputation, but I also think it's interesting that if you wanted to go on the who's the player that's due reputation vote thing, Doughty's just is right there with him. Doughty's been a bridesmaid all this time, too.
Yep.
Doughty's playing.
Doughty's in there. Webb's 30, in there.
He's playing 29, 25 a night, Doughty.
No, I know. Well,
that's
the minute that Voinov
insane.
That Voinov went supernova, all of a sudden, an extra, what, 5 minutes a night went onto Doughty's game sheet. And it's not as if he's tired either. That's the thing. Like, I'm doing the Kings game tonight, the Habs Kings. Doughty's going to play 30 minutes. Just not going to be tired. Still do an interview after the game, chewing bubblegum. Don't care. Just playing hockey.
Why are you doing the game tonight, sweetie? You're sick. You need to get rest.
Because I'm not as sick as Chantal, and Chantal's pretty sick tonight, so I'm taking her spot and hosting the game tonight.
So you're less sick than your coworker.
I'm less sick.
And then,
I'm not that sick. I'm just stuffed up. So I've been saying the last couple of days. I'm not sick.
When's the last time you actually took a sick day from Sportsnet? You take sick days all the time from this show. God damn, what a prima donna.
I have a hangnail. I can't hold the microphone.
I don't take sick days. I don't. You know, it was so bad. Was it 2 years ago? Remember when I lost my voice and I still went in to do Hockey Central? And I was talking like this. Still went in. You know why? Because there's no one else to do it.
That's just it.
But I've always been that way. I've always been like, I've always, and I guess part of it's a Wally Pipp reason too.
Yes.
I've always never like, that's my shift. I'm going to go and do my shift. I might
not
be,
to get too,
you know, a little depression era about that, but if you got a job, you got a job.
No, it's true though. I'm the same way. I'm very Wally Pipp about it. I mean, I think you need to be more Wally Pipp than I do though, because you're in an industry where everybody gets Wally Pipped at some point.
Oh, God, right. I know. So true. Yeah.
I don't know how you guys don't all go to the chiropractor with the over-the-shoulder looking you all have to do at all times in the industry. Who's younger? Who's cheaper? I have this thing, too, about taking sick days and not missing work. One, because I'm workaholic, but I'm workaholic because of that thing. You know, when I was a kid, my dad was an electrical contractor in the city. He was a union guy. And, and you know, being an operative word is contract. When your contract is done and the work is done, you go to the next thing. And there were times when my dad would be out of work for months on end waiting for the next gig. And it would suck and be scary. And
sucks.
It's a tense time, you know. It really does. It doesn't help when my dad would buy a hand-hammered wok off QVC, the shopping channel. It goes so well with Mom.
I mean, hammered.
All the stakes get higher too when you have things like two kids and a mortgage.
Yeah, exactly. That's and a nice house and everything else. Yeah.
Yeah, so like you
so
make sure
I
you
that's
protect that.
I never take sick days because I just because of that reason. It's just I'm a workaholic because of that reason. And I was listening to another podcast on in the car the other day, and the guy was talking about like binge watching TV shows. And he's like, you know, I don't think I really will watch this show, like The Flash now. But, you know, if I have a free weekend or if I'm sick in bed one day, I'll just probably watch like 10 episodes. I'm like, I don't understand either of those things.
What?
Like, what is a free weekend? And what is a sick day where you sit and binge watch a television program?
What are these things
I want
you
to
talk
know,
about?
I want to know more about these. I want to subscribe to your newsletter, sir, and learn more about these things. But I do not know them right now.
Yeah, but, you know, it's bizarre. I've always had that because I spent, you know, getting out of university, I had like a million different jobs and couldn't find traction anywhere.
Was that grave digging?
I didn't like any of the jobs. Oh, I loved grave digging. You kidding? That
right.
Put me through university. I would go. I always say to Clara, you know, if this thing ever blows up in my face, if tomorrow I'm unemployed, if tonight I go on air and just finally forget that I'm doing TV and think that I'm doing a podcast and talk on TV the way that I talk on this podcast and I get turfed, I'm going back to the cemetery. I would go back there in a flash. I loved everything about it. You're outdoors, physical exercise, you're digging, you're filling in graves. Listen. What's the worst thing that's going to happen to you at a cemetery? What could possibly go wrong?
Well, zombie apocalypse, obviously.
How cool would that be to be part of?
It would not be cool. Well, it depends. Are they lumbering George Romero zombies, or are they fast-sprinting World War Z zombies? That's the real
wow.
key.
Wow, it's a great philosophical question to discuss here on the podcast. But honestly, I would go back to that in a second. No, I mean, I worked at the beer store for part-time. I worked at both Great Lakes Brewery and the beer store at the same time.
Oh,
for
really?
About
wow.
a year and a half. Yeah. Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah. But, I mean, and no, I was and like, it, I never, like, thought, because I got a university, I had an English degree. What the F am I going to do with an English degree? Oh, yeah, you're going to go back to school, dummy. And that's what I tried to do. And then I ended up taking a summer job at the Fan with Strombo and then just never went back.
The rest is
But I always have the back of my mind, like, I remember, like, never having an idea of what a career was like or a semblance of a career could be like. And that's, I've just made it up as I went along. So I'm pretty wolfish about the territory.
And from that point on, you became the Jim Belushi to Strombo's John Belushi.
I wish that guy gets paid. I'm going to change my business card, by the way. Did I tell you about this?
No.
I'm going to change my business card because right now it says Jeff Merrick, host Hockey Central. And I put in the application last week for it to say Jeff Merrick, the affordable Strombolopoulos. You see how well that goes over.
Well, it's a little wordy, although it probably went at Scrabble. The thing I don't get about sick days, though, is like the NHL, right? Now, we see guys that miss games with the flu, and then we see guys that miss games with a stomach ailment, which means they don't want to shit their pants on the ice. Yeah. But the common cold, I'm not feeling hot. You can't really get that day off, can you? There's only 82 of them.
Yeah, I wouldn't take that off.
Yeah.
I mean, I come in, like, I have come in sometimes and had to be, like, sent home. And I understand it, because here's the weird thing. I will never take a sick day. I'll always come in no matter how sick I am. But if anybody else shows up sick, I'm like, what the F is this? Get this guy out of here. He's I'm the biggest hypocrite in the world.
In the world. Like, wouldn't you want to give more sick days to NHL players so they keep that festering mumpian illness out of the locker room?
Thing is, you get well, I don't know if it's so much true anymore, but once upon a time, like, I'm sorry, if you had the sniffles, yeah, you're playing. Too bad, buddy. Oh, you're hungover? Yeah, well, too bad. Not only are you skating hard to practice, but you're also going to get extra ice tonight.
So how many sick days do you think an NHL player gets? Any?
How many do they get or how many do they take?
How many do they
get? You're allowed as probably as many as...
You think so?
As many as you're legitimately sick by the team doctors.
How many days can you say to your coach, I can't go tonight, man. I feel real, real sick. You know, I'm not feeling up to it. I got the sniffles. I got the head, the head stuffies. I got the hacking lug. How many of those do you get in an 82 game season? I'm talking for games, not for practices.
Yeah, no, coach would probably say, okay, go to the doctor, and then you go to the team doctor. The doctor says, look, this guy's BSing. There's nothing wrong with this guy. And then you play.
Always on the up and up.
Oh, no, I know. Exactly. Oh, man, some of the stories I've heard have been bad. One of the problems, too, is you don't want to get that rep around the league for being soft. See, the worst thing you can call anyone in the NHL, if you really want to insult someone, call them soft. I was on a panel 2 years ago on Hockey Central, and I won't say who it was, but one of the guys called the other person soft. Oh, man, you've gone soft. And when we went off the air, you should have seen the screaming match. How dare you call me that on television? Oh, yeah. Oh, it was bad.
Wow.
Oh, my God. Yeah, that's so... No one wants to be called soft in the game. No way. You can call them anything in the world. Call them soft? Oh, that's a line. You want to get someone's backup? Oh, man, your game is soft. What? Oh, man, you've gotten soft. Yeah. It's a big one. Oh, yeah.
I would go with flaccid. That's more even worse.
Hey, that's rubber soft. Hose, what gives? Get on set. Let's go, pal.
Take
a blue pill and get to work.
Before we get to the going postal, a quick look at the standings because they're getting interesting. Winnipeg
with a bad one. Today, by the way.
Oh, you want to do an intro? Yeah, sure. Hey, Maddie, you want to do an intro? That's the case,
I'd love to.
All right, let's start the show proper, shall we?
Why not?
Jeff Merrick of Sportsnet. Greg Wyshynski of Yahoo Sports.
Charlie Brown, Peppermint Patty,
Matty Brown,
Matty Brown.
Matt, how much time left the show?
That's got to go
on a
T-shirt.
Matty, is Darren Pang on yet? Yeah. We have really good intros, and I feel bad that we don't do them. Although, I'll point out to the listeners, by the way, that you, I think when we started the show, your original concept was we just don't even have an opening.
No production. Zero production.
No production
you and me
all,
talk, and then when we're out of words, we stop. The opposite of every other show.
Yeah.
I'm still convinced the only thing that makes people lean forward is silence. And the whole world is full of intros and sound effects and, ugh.
You were saying?
That always makes my day. That always makes my day.
All right. So, last night, big win for Detroit over the Rangers.
Your 83 points, 84 points
for Tampa Bay, 87 for Los Habitants. I still think we're going to see the Yzerman Cup in round one between Tampa and Detroit. I think Montreal will have the stuff to finish first. But it's getting real interesting right now. Detroit's got two in hand on Montreal, and they're only 4 points back.
Yeah, the only thing that kind of sucks right now is it sets up right now, because it sets up kind of perfectly right now with Montreal, Boston, Tampa, Detroit. I mean, Islanders and Pittsburgh is pretty juicy, but you do want Pittsburgh and Washington and Rangers and Islanders.
It looks like we're not going to get Rangers-Islanders. Right, we're not going to get Rangers-Islanders in the first round. That sucks. That means that we may not get that series, depending on what happens in the first round.
But
Islanders-Pittsburgh would be a lot of friggin' fun, though. Like, that'd be a lot of fun for the pure nostalgic of that rivalry, right?
Tons. The thing is, tonight is a huge game for the Florida Panthers, right? Boston's got two games in hand. They play tonight, too. They face off against the Dallas Stars. What happened last time? Refresh my memory. What happened last time the Florida Panthers, specifically with Dmitry Kulikov in the lineup, faced off against the Dallas Stars?
I believe the Dallas Stars season ended. I don't know why they keep playing games.
This will be an interesting night to see who goes after Kulikov and whether Kulikov says, okay, this is the code, I got to do this. Knowing how dinged up the back end is for Florida and how important the 2 points are. Mm-hmm. You know they're going to go after him.
It's going to be a fun one.
Oh, yeah.
Washington Rangers, Montreal, Boston. Oh, fuck. Washington Rangers again? God damn it. Come on, man. Why?
Yeah.
Why?
Yeah, I know.
Why?
You want Washington Pitt and you want the...
Spin the friggin' wheel. I want Washington anybody but Rangers. But the problem is that it's either going to be the Islanders or the Rangers in the first round for Washington.
Yeah.
Unless Pittsburgh makes a little bit of a move. Well, Pittsburgh's got two games in hand on the Islanders, so it's not out of the realm of possibility. I don't know, dude. It's probably gonna be Islanders Pittsburgh in the first round and Rangers Capitals the 50th time. The worst.
Islanders Pittsburgh is fascinating in the first round because the Islanders always play Pittsburgh tough. It's a great matchup. And if Pittsburgh loses, oh man, if that team, I mean, we've seen Mario Mad before.
Paging Michael Babcock, please pick up the red courtesy phone.
I don't know, man. There's really hard questions asked in Pittsburgh.
You're saying you're going to give me $20 million a year? And you're going to let me be the general
But
manager?
Wait a minute. You were just asking Detroit for $4 million. Where does this $20 million come from, Mike?
It's interesting. Actually. With the price of relocating the family.
So you're saying you're going to melt down
the Roberto Clemente statue and make it into one of me.
My favorite relocation bill story ever. Doug McLean told me this when he was running the Panthers. He got a bill.
What's a bill from 30... Seattle? No, I'm kidding.
he got a bill from. For $30,000 when they traded for Igor Larionov, an extra bill for $30,000 for moving. He's like, $30,000 for moving? And they just used him, like, I think, as a rental for the rest of the season. $30,000. You know what Igor brought?
What?
His wine cellar. He brought his entire wine cellar and stuck the Panthers with the bill.
That's amazing.
That's a good one.
We got a couch. We got a bed. We got 87 bottles of Merlot.
It's awesome.
Over in the Western Conference, the Nashville Predators is doing what they can to come back to the pack, losing four in a row. St. Louis with two games in hand, only four back. St. Louis, I mean, I don't know what you want if you're the Blues. Do you want the Blackhawks in round one? Do you want to get it out of the way? Do you want to weekend in another round? Do you want to just take on the Caneless Blackhawks? And just get it on right now, or do you want to try to avoid them?
No, I think you want to try to avoid them. I think you want to stay away from the Hawks.
Because whoever wins that division could easily end up playing the Kings. If the Kings 100%. Make the cut. Because that's the that's a weird dude. So we got Winnipeg and Minnesota in the wild cards. And you got the Kings and the Sharkies at 72 points each. And you got Calgary.
Uh-huh. 72.
You know, yeah, you imagine that's going to be on the wane at some point.
Well, with Giordano out.
Uh-huh. So you figure
so long you can say,
So let's call it L.A. and San Jose. One of them gets the Calgary spot. Vancouver makes the cut. And then
That's not guaranteed. That's not guaranteed.
I have him in the playoffs, so it's guaranteed.
Okay, very good.
Yeah, so clearly. So that means that the Sharks would have to jump up and take one of the wild card spots. And I don't think Minnie's. Can I just tell you one thing about Devin Dubnyk for a second, who I'm going to write about on the site today?
What's up?
Combined record this season, okay? 25-8-3.
Not bad.
Listen.
Did you see the article on him a couple of weeks ago when he was asked what the lowest point in his career was? And he said he was staying at a hotel in Hamilton playing in the American Hockey League, looking out his windows and looking at all the bikers at Tim Hortons out of his hotel window thinking, wow, what has happened to my career?
All right. So I think it needs to happen for various reasons. But I'm thinking
what, the Minnesota makes it in?
No, Sharks miss. I think the Sharks will miss. Yeah. I think Winnie finds a way. The Kings are too good. Calgary drops out. Minnesota makes it. Sharkies miss.
You watch, man. San Jose misses the playoffs. You know what's going to happen?
Nothing.
That's right.
McClellan gets fired, and then nothing.
And then gets hired the next day. And, yeah. Whew, I'm out of that. Whew, good. All right. I'm away from that mess.
It's like, sorry, I just want to say, Todd, that we really respect the job you've done here. And bring, bring. Hang on one second. Yeah, yes, Doug Wilson. Oh, yeah, Mr. Nonis. I'll be done with it in a second. You can call him in 30 seconds. Just 30. By the way, did you see the thing I tweeted before, by the way?
No, what's up?
Dave Nonis looks exactly like a young Jim Ross.
Oh, my God. I got to look at this.
It's great.
Really?
It does.
I can kind of see it, too.
It's there. It's
Where
fantastic.
Is it? What's with all the pictures? Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Oh, slobber knocker.
I mean, they both kind of look like Bob's big boy. But, you know.
Oh, my God. That's so true. He looks like Jim Ross.
A young Jim Ross. So should Notice start wearing a cowboy hat? That's the real question.
And a goatee. Start selling barbecue sauce. Oh, right. My God, that's fantastic. Now, what's all the pictures of beer on your Twitter feed last night?
Oh.
I'm on my feed. You're tweeting like everybody out pictures of beer last night.
I somehow gained 1,000 new followers in the last week, and I was just greeting them and saying, hey, and that, like, get ready for hockey chat and pictures of beer. And then people started tweeting me pictures of beer.
How'd you gain 1,000 followers?
I have no idea.
Like, all of a sudden start to be nice to people?
No, that can't be it.
You starting to be nice to people on Twitter? Hey, it's Wyszynski, guys. A swell fella.
No, I think I've been nicer to people on Twitter than I have been on the podcast.
Before following me, you may want to listen to my podcast and then make a decision whether you want to hit the follow button.
All right. We've got a huge ton of questions that people want to ask us.
All right.
Going postal. Let's do a Wednesday favorite on Thursday.
Wow, another intro. Holy smokes, the production value to this show today.
It's time to look deep into the souls of Jeff Merrick and Greg Wyszynski. Not that deep.
We answer your mail.
PuckDaddyBlog at yahoo.com. On Twitter at Jeff Merrick and at Wyszynski. We're going postal on Merrick versus Wyszynski.
Rob Fado writes in, if the Pens collapse, do you not believe in the yearly collapse of Fleury, Jeff? It's not even a matter if it's when.
The difference this year is Mike Bales, the new goaltending coach for the Pittsburgh Penguins, has him playing a little quieter game. Whereas before, you know, God bless him, was Joe Meloche, who was essentially a scout who happened to have played goal in his past, who was a quote-unquote goaltending coach for the Pittsburgh Penguins. They brought in Mike Bales this year, and Fleury Fleury to me, to everybody. We talked to Kevin Gibson about this on the podcast. He's just a different goaltender. I don't think we're going to see the guy that, you know, gets on his surfboard when the puck goes into the corner and goes fishing him out of the corner anymore.
He also, outside of that one brain fart he had against Columbus, wasn't bad last year. He wasn't bad at all last year.
It was okay. Yeah, it was okay.
Yeah, so everybody still has the memories of the Islanders. God, there were that Flyers series. Holy
dude,
shit.
The Flyers series, the Islanders series, where the strategy was get the puck. How many times have you heard it? We got to get pucks in deep. Yeah, you know why the Islanders had to get pucks in deep? Because their best chance of scoring against Fleury was shooting the puck from behind the red line. Shooting the puck behind the net was going in on Fleury.
The Boston-Vancouver Cup Final remains the most amazing complete package series of hockey I've ever seen in the Stanley Cup playoffs in the last 20 years, maybe. It was just insane. That Flyers-Penguins series, though, might be top five. Just for the storylines, Couturier versus Malkin, the violence, that James Neal with the trying to headhunt everybody on the ice that one game. That was insane. And not a goalie in the damn world that could stop a shot in that series.
Man, we did like a 2-hour special on Sportsnet in the middle of that series about the level of violence in the NHL. Sportsnet magazine had it splashed on the cover. It was freaking awesome.
It was great. Tyler Evans, is there anything like a successful passes made stat? Should players be valued based on how good a passer they are? Well, that's an interesting one for a couple of different reasons. One, you'd expect there could be some metric on passes completed, but there's a part of me that says it's kind of a nonsensical stat because it so depends on so many other factors. But then I said to myself, yet I watch the NFL. Like, if you could have a quarterback with completed passes, and that's a stat, why couldn't you then have completed passes for any NHL player?
I have not thought about that a single day in my life, and my initial instinct is that's a great idea.
Right?
It's a wonderful idea. That really is, yeah. And distance of pass as well. 100%.
Oh, God, for a defenseman? For a defenseman completed passes? That'd be amazing.
Yep, that's a great idea. Who sent that?
That would be, I will tell you who it is. It is Tyler Evans.
Tyler Evans, I apologize in advance. One day I'm sure I will steal that idea on television.
I want to say he's been on Game Show Friday, but then I think that most people listen to the show at some point have been on Game Show Friday.
Tyler, that's a great idea, bud. That's really
good. Oh, my God.
I like that idea.
Dark suit day for the Professional Hockey Geek Society president over here. Mark Cole writes in.
That was 2 days ago in the Florida-Toronto game. Dark suit night. Oh boy!
We got so much feedback about that podcast. By the way, people saying I just could picture Jeff Merrick literally weeping as he's frantically punching buttons on his phone trying to get some kind of a stream.
Yeah, I'll tell you what. Following it, but let's put it this way: a cat couldn't even scratch it. Let's move on.
Mark Cole writes in, did you see the footage of the lady wrestler taking the full-on chair shot from a guy over the weekend? I did not. Did you?
I didn't. No, I sent Mark an email about that last night. I didn't see it. Ask him if there's a link somewhere. I haven't seen it.
Thoughts on intergender wrestling and or unprotected chair shots 2015 CTE post-Benoit sport? Well, on the intergender wrestling...
Andy Kaufman.
It's also Andy Kaufman, but there's also like... There's also been some women that were like hulking behemoths of women that I thought it would be really fun is when they would wrestle men. But usually wasn't the rule, and this is so demeaning, but I mean this is the way they worked it, wasn't the rule always like it was with the midget wrestlers where if a woman entered the ring, she had to wrestle another woman?
Yes.
Or if a midget entered the ring, they'd have to wrestle. Because I remember that WrestleMania where Bundy wrestled the midgets. And he destroyed like Little Beaver or something. and all the midgets, like, I remember there was like a midget funeral. They stood around, and I'm saying midget because that's the name that they used. They stood around and slowly dragged them off the mat after Bundy splashed them or something.
They got him out of the ring with a spatula.
chair shots with CTE. They've gotten away from it pretty much. They've got, in WWE, I think it's mostly chair shots on the back, isn't it? I think.
It's been so long for me, but I remember the Mankind Rock match, the title switch match, where Mick took about, I don't know, 24 unprotected. He had his hands cuffed behind his back from all angles too, like from the side, like not just. I remember talking to that night. I was talking to Lance Storm that night. We were watching the match, talking to him on the phone. He's like, the worst shots aren't the ones that Rocky's throwing over the top of his head. because you can kind of position your head to take it at a really thick part of your skull. The dangerous ones are the ones that come, that because Rocky's throwing them from the side as well. He said those are the ones where all the boys in the back are like, what the hell is he doing? You're going to kill this guy hitting him like that. If you do a chair shot, you got to do it over top as opposed to trying to hit him from the side. That's how you can really maim someone. That's one of the guys we're hot about.
AJ writes in, Connor McDavid, Steven Stamkos, John Tavares, and Nathan MacKinnon are all 18 years old and are all entering the 2015 draft. How would you rank them 1-4?
Connor McDavid, Stamkos, Tavares, MacKinnon.
That's he nailed it, I think. I think that's the ranking right there. I remember there being a Stamkos derby. I remember people being really excited about Stamkos, but not to the level of McDavid.
It was funny because all through that OHL, those couple of years in the OHL, it was all about John Tavares, the exceptional player. And I remember when a Stamkos this year, and I talked to one scout who said, listen, man, I'll take Stamkos over John Tavares any day of the week. And I said, what? And I hadn't watched a ton of Sarnia Sting games. Like, what? Really? Goes, you watch the Stamkos kid. I'm telling you, I'll take Stamkos over Tavares. Now, they both turned into elite players, like two of the best players in the entire world. But there weren't a lot of people, myself included, that knew that Stamkos was going to be... Everyone knew he was going to be good. No one knew he was going to be the juggernaut that he turned into in his last year of junior and then into the NHL.
It's all about John Tavares. I still think Tavares is better intangibles. That guy's going to be looked back upon as an Yzerman Sakic level leader when he's done.
Yeah, a quieter leader than those guys. Mm-hmm. The thing that always impresses me about Stamkos is one of the same things that impresses me about Ovechkin. You know what the play is. You just can't stop it.
Right, exactly.
You know exactly what the setup is. You just can't stop it. Sorry. It's not a secret what the Caps are going to do on the power play. It's not a secret what the Bolts are going to do on the power play. Just good luck stopping it. I love it.
Speaking of Ovechkin, sound the Crosby versus Ovechkin alarm as Michael Clark asks, hey guys, between Crosby and Ovechkin, who do you think makes the league more entertaining at their best if this was a world that is where it's either one or the other that's better at one time? So who at their best makes the league more entertaining? And I have an answer, but I want to hear yours.
There's more of a subtlety to Crosby's game than there is to Alexander Ovechkin's. And Ovechkin's is more rock and roll, and so by definition would be more entertaining. So I'll take Ovechkin.
I'll take Sid, because I think that Sid has something going for him that Ovechkin doesn't, which is he's got the gravitas of having been a winner. And when Sid's good, you need big bads in this league. When Ovechkin's good, they're still the Capitals. They still are a team that can't get out of their way to win
a second round series.
When Sid's good, that means the Penguins are good. And that means you have a measuring stick by which you can put any number of teams in the Eastern Conference up against them. So I think for the entertainment quotient, I agree. There's no one more entertaining in the league than Ovechkin when he's on and jumping around and scoring crazy goals and shit.
But hammer guys.
If the question is who makes the league more exciting when they're really really good, it's Sid.
Okay,
that's my. I think I argued that pretty well.
Sure.
I don't know. Maybe.
No wrong answer in that one.
Anthony Lorenzo writes in, I've been a casual hockey fan, but thanks to Merrick Rzeszynski, my interest has grown.
Sorry about that.
With that in mind, I have a few questions. Will you be in attendance for the Devils' 20th anniversary of their first Stanley Cup at The Rock?
Oh, yes, you will. Yes, you will, Greg.
I have tickets. I'll be going as a fan, and Brodeur will be there. Would you or Merrick, the hockey historian, recommend any books for someone who is trying to increase their knowledge of the game? I'm currently reading The Art of Scouting.
That's a good one. Shane Malloy. There is... it depends how geeky you want to get. I mean, I always recommend going back to the very beginnings and find out how the league actually started. To that end, there's a book called Deceptions and Double Cross, which is a little bit thick and a little bit academic at times. But if you want to get a sense of... Let's just be honest about it. The sheer blatant corruptness of how the league was formed back in 1917 and what this group of owners did to Eddie Livingston, who, listen, make no mistake about it, was no saint himself. pick up deceptions and double cross and find out exactly what the origins of this league are. I mean, there are other sort of books that are just fun to read, good sort of biographies and stories about big personalities in the league. But if you want to find out where the league actually came from, deceptions and double cross is the best one.
If you're looking for a book that explains the game to someone who doesn't necessarily play it, raise his hand. Hockey Plays and Strategies by Mike Johnston and Ryan Walter is a real solid read. It's a, basically a coaching manual, but it's a coaching manual that will allow you to see the game in a different way than you did before if you haven't been playing the game since you were Matty Brown's age. So there
By the way, that's my favorite hockey drink. Did I ever tell you that?
What?
The Ryan Walter.
What is it?
The Ryan Walter. Well, you have, sir. I'll have a Ryan Walter.
Oh, a Ryan Walter. Shut up.
You liked it.
You know what the Alex Ovechkin is, right? You know what the Alex Ovechkin is, right?
What's the Alex Ovechkin?
It's a white Russian with no cup.
Oh. Did I know that joke?
You had to. It's a great joke.
Probably. It is a pretty good joke.
Finally, Anthony asks, have you or do you know of anyone who has been to all current 30 NHL rinks? I mean, I know people that have.
People that work in the industry, the people that broadcast partners, and But as far as fans, I don't know if I've... Have you ever had any friends that have done the Gilligan's Island 30-team tour?
I've met people that have. Yeah, I met people that have. But I have not close friends. I've often wondered if it would be fun to do it. I don't know if it'd be fun or if it'd be a real pain in the ass.
You know what I've always wanted to do? If I was, boom, tomorrow, like, independently wealthy beyond my wildest dreams, you know what I would love to do? This is, like, ultimate geek. I would like to play a game, like, one game of hockey in every rink in North America. Hmm. Every single rink.
Hmm, that'd be fun. It'd be a lot of fun, actually.
Take a while, but what the hell?
Ryan Rodriguez writes in. By the way, love the podcast. As always, Random Penguin Chris Beach.
Yeah!
Question for both of you guys, but more so Wish, I suppose. How do you balance being a Devils fan with covering the rest of the league objectively? I'm in journalism school right now and hope to work in hockey someday, but I'm not sure how to compartmentalize not living and dying with one team all season. I guess the question for you, Merrick, would be, like, you obviously have friends that are in the league. Acquaintances, friends, whatever.
Yeah.
Before I answer, how do you square those relationships with your job as someone who does the job of covering hockey?
Yeah, you just have to when it's tough. And, you know, I mean, anyone that I know in the industry, like any player that I know, it's funny because players are pretty understanding about it because they all know that you have a job to do. And part of the job is to criticize those players or critique the game, even though I never played at the NHL level. And they all get that. So I haven't really had the conflict, that conflict. And, you know, as much as I, you know, love players like Ryan O'Reilly, and I can joke about it on the podcast, like, I'm eyes open wide about the player that Ryan O'Reilly is, and I know when he struggles, and I know when he does well. And I think it's a matter of how honest you can be about yourself and about what you're seeing, and whether you're seeing it from an objective person's eyes or a friend's eyes. And it can be tough. It can be really challenging. But so far, I've never run into a situation where I've deliberately shied away from saying, you know, that's a bad play. Or he's going through a funk right now.
You have to. As far as we can, I mean, I've talked about the Devils fan conundrum for before on the podcast. It's once you've covered the sport for a while. I mean, you're not watching the same team over and over again, so naturally you're not going to be as intensely fanatic as you are when before you get into the industry. And there are times when I go to games when I'm not nearly as raucous as I've been in the past, partially because I worry about someone with a camera phone, to be honest with you. and I've gotten recognized in games, so it's kind of weird. But as far as the fandom thing goes, like, I'm honest about it. Like, there's no denying that I'm a Devils fan. There's no denying that I have a, you know, Marty jersey and a Stevens jersey, a Christmas tree Stevens jersey and a Claude Lemieux jersey. And I'm going on Sunday because I'm a fan, and the 95 team was one that made me cry as a kid. So it's like, I mean, there's no getting around that, right? And I've always said this. I've had this conversation with like Myrtle like 1,000 times about how, you know, he's the opposite of me in the sense that he never was a fan of a team ever. And I grew up.
That's not true. Not true.
What?
Nope, not true. Kamloops Blazers, Western Hockey.
That doesn't count.
Oh, okay.
So, but like I say, you know, I'm honest about my fandom because I feel like it's always been an entry point for people that have had similar experiences to me. It's an entry point for people that live and die with their teams and say, oh, this guy isn't simply just writing from a studious perspective or a journalistic perspective. He's also understanding the passion inherent in the game and why this shit means something to me. And there are writers, the majority of sports writers kind of distance themselves from their fandom and park that and never revisit it. But I'm like, you know, clearly if the Devils fired Pete DeBoer, it affects me as a fan of the team, but it also gives me better insight into that story than it would if I wasn't, you know, following the team on a more regular basis.
But here's the difference though. See, sports is that one area where your entry point into it is as a fan. Right? Like you look at anyone else in the industry, right? Like your entry point for news isn't, wow, man, I can't get enough of parliaments. I can't get enough of parliament here in Canada. I can't get enough, reading about Ottawa. In sports, your entry point into all of this is as a fan. I was a kid and I was a fan of this team, this player, this year of hockey. That's the difference. Like at a certain point, I dropped the team thing. I don't even know where or how it happened. But I just dropped it, but I never dropped the love of the game. Like I always, and you know, wish, no, I don't think anyone loves a game of hockey more than I do, with all due respect. But I just don't find any satisfaction in cheering for one side over another. Somewhere along the lines for me, that died. But, and I always had this thought too, that if that went, then that's all that there was for me for hockey. Like if I didn't cheer for my favorite team, the team that I cheered for growing up, if I lost that, then I would lose my appreciation for hockey. I am here to report, everybody, that doesn't happen. It really doesn't, if you honestly love the game as opposed to just cheer for laundry.
The most interesting thing for me as a Devils fan in this industry has been the idea that, like, it's been the reaction of other Devils fans to me. I have ones that say I'm not hard enough on the team, because I don't want to seem like I'm a homer or something. And then I have people that say I'm constantly negative about the team because I don't want to come off as a homer. It's the perceptions of other fans to me being a Devils fan with this platform has always been so fascinating. Yeah. You got to get out of here.
I got to get out of here.
No show tomorrow, unfortunately, because I'm bouncing around, and I think, I mean, unless you're going to do one.
No, I got bouncing through tomorrow. No, I got the junior games.
Bouncing tomorrow too. All right, yep. So we escape the specter of Game Show Friday for 1 week, but back Monday.
Woo-hoo!
Thanks to nobody.
Yeah. Thanks, nobody.
Thanks to nobody.
We should make the Schmaltz Cup a topic on Game Show.
That's right. We should make Schmaltz Cup a topic on Game Show, says Maddie. I agree. We should thank the memory of Tubby Schmaltz, who gave us a great intro today.
That's right.
Follow the Schmaltz Cup, Junior Seahawks. That's right, ladies and gentlemen.
Mm-hmm. That's
right. I got to go.
Nice, Tubby Schmaltz. All right, bye. Thanks, everybody. Enjoy the weekend. Take care. Thank you.